Welcome to the Reformers Pipeline, your dose of empowerment and the pipeline to inform your decisions on how you can support change in our education system.
This is Lindsay, affectionately known as Miss Black.
And I'm Hadi Ha, Mr. Broussard. If you're feeling like you're ready for summer to come to a close, honestly, Lindsay.
I know. What? I did not think you were going to say that.
I think. After being in Vegas, it was so damn hot.
Oh my gosh. That's the problem, though, because I saw some meme or something about, like, how many of y'all in D.C. are ready for fall weather? That's why, because y'all summer is not normal. I thought it was like, I love fall, but really it's an avoidance of summer.
It is. That's exactly what it is.
Took me 10 years. Well, advocates, we are back with season 2, semester 2. And as you know, this season we're breaking our content down across 2 semesters. So we're glad to be back and have y'all support for all of what we have planned for this semester. And there is actually a specific way that we are asking you to support outside of listening and continuing to share. Donations! Yes.
Yes.
We are full-time employees using our spare time and spare funds to fuel this pipeline, and we are growing. Like, we got real big innovative ideas. We need you to help us continue to grow by donating to our PayPal at paypal.com/TheReformersPipeline. Your monetary support allows us to buy equipment, studio time, merch, y'all. We're going to come out with some merchandise, but we need your support, amongst many other things. So if you missed any of that, please check out the description for ways to donate and support.
Yes, and please go ahead and visit our website at TheReformersPipeline.com to catch up on anything that you've missed. Might we also suggest that you stay engaged with us on social media. Follow us on Instagram at TheReformersPipeline. Follow us on Twitter at TRP Advocates. And last but not least, subscribe to our YouTube channel. With this being our first episode back this semester, we have to update you on all of the things that have been going on in our lives. So, Mama Lens, what's up?
Honestly, I was trying to think about what to update with. I was like, damn, life is moving fast. I'm going to give y'all, like, the real life update once I process and settle it. But I'm reflecting on my hot girl summer.
Yes.
So, if you follow me on the grizzly gram, I took several trips this summer. And I actually want to just highlight interesting things that I learned on these trips.
Mm-hmm.
So the first trip, I went to Hawaii. We were in Honolulu. I was actually with my family. However, I made it seem like I was with a nigga because I can do that. And I was just really controlling the narrative of my story. And it's so easy. Like, people are like, oh, people live fake lives. And I'm like, oh, this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I was posting, like, you know, pictures of me with nobody else. I used my brother's feet in one of the videos because his feet were in the ocean. But if he was on Close Friends, you saw a picture of my mom,
right,
my family, the friends that I made. It's just funny. And I need these niggas to know that this is actually what I'm used to.
Yes.
So just because I went on this family trip, don't think a nigga ain't flew me out on a trip.
Mm.
But anyways, the next trip was to New Orleans. Okay, we're there for 9 days. My mom got sister locks, y'all.
Yes, they look so good. Oh my gosh, she's so beautiful.
She's on her journey, man.
I love it.
And originally, I wanted to move to New Orleans and, like, live there. And I decided I'm not going to do that.
What?
Because I just, like...
I know.
If I'm not going to jump into the alcohol industry or the restaurant industry, it's... For me, from my view and my experience, is very limited opportunities when I correlate them with the talents that I have.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, more to come on moving, but that's what I did learn. I've been wanting to move to New Orleans for a couple years now. Lastly, we closed it out in Vegas. My friend Shannon and Armani came. My mom was with us as well. And, like, we had already had some families going to be out there. But I just reiterated that I love my friends so much. I just love them. Like, Shannon and Armani especially, them is down-ass girls, okay? They're with whatever. And they just reiterate, because, like, in this past year alone, there's people that I'm not friends with anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And the bonds that I have now, I don't have to question anything with them. And so, just reiteration of me taking proper steps to ensure that, like, my mental health is at the forefront, my self-love is at the forefront. And lastly, I cut my hair, y'all.
Yes.
I haven't even revealed it on Instagram yet, so hopefully by the time you hear this, you'll be able to look on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah, by the time you hear this, but I cut my hair, y'all. Like, it's like shaved down on the sides, like cut.
It looks good, though. It looks really good. I really do like it.
All right, but those are my updates.
That's good.
Because I can't take all the time. Okay.
Well, mine would be, well, you know, I always say that they'll be quick, and then next thing you know, it's not quick.
You know,
but
it's a lie.
Similar to Lynn's, I've been in these streets, too. I know that I have mentioned earlier in semester one that I wanted to go one place per month, and I have far exceeded that goal. And so, like, I'm moving into the phase of wanting to kind of be on some chill stuff. So we'll see where that goes. But this summer, I've been to Chicago, Atlanta, New York, Houston, and I also did Vegas recently because my brother just turned 24. Shout out to his
husband. Yes.
So that it's just 24? Been doing a lot. Yeah, 24, right?
Yeah, is that crazy? It is.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So we were talking and he was like, yeah, I'm looking forward to 24 because, like, it's such a good age. And I was like, well, yes, it is. But I was like, 25 is a good age, too. Like, there's other good ages. He's like, but, like, what's so special about 25? And I was like, well, you know, that's when you can actually rent a car. And he was like, well, I can do that now. And I'm like, okay, well, stop.
Okay,
I'm not about to go tit for tat for you.
Right. We're trying to celebrate, too.
Leave it alone. Yes, 24 is a good age, but 25 is, too. But anyway, yeah, so it was good to be home with the family. And because I flew from DC to Houston and Houston to Cali. So I was out there for some time and spent a lot of quality time with the family. And that was just really nice because I haven't been home for that long in a while.
Yeah,
so
you haven't.
That, I think that the whole virtual work and that also was very painful to be up at 6 a.m. On most days.
Very painful.
All these damn meetings and things. But all that to say, I had a great time. But similar to Lynn's, which is so crazy, I feel like I'm so in alignment. While I was on these trips, the question of where to next kept arising. Whether it was from an Uber driver, or my parents, or just random people asking me, oh, so like you've been in DC for 10 years, so like where to next? And I'm like, well, I really don't know. And transparently, like I think I've been feeling, first I was like, oh, Houston, that's where it's gonna be. Then I went back to Houston, I was like, no, this is not where it's gonna be. So, I don't know, I think I have some thinking to do around that, and I like the way that you thought more so about the industries that you would be potentially entering, as opposed to just moving to a place just to move there, because I think that that's oftentimes what happens.
That's what I wanted to do. Yeah.
But I like that you actually are being a lot more intentional with it.
Yeah.
So I guess I have some thinking to do about that. I will say, fire. While I was home, I live east of LA, about an hour east of LA, and Rancho/Fontana, and there have been a lot of fires in that area. And so literally the day that we left to Vegas, because it's only like a 3-hour drive from where we live, there was this big fire that broke out, and there was like evacuation orders. And growing up, we really didn't have, like, we had fires in the area, but they never were as close as they are today. And so I think it was kind of, you know, just a moment of, I had to show, like, a moment of gratitude and appreciation, and just was very just fortunate to be in a space to where my house did not burn down, like, it's good. But just to think, like, there's nothing that you can do in those types of situations, but just hope for the
best.
There's
nothing that you can do.
It was crazy. And so, shout out to Lynn's for checking on me. I want to say Ebony checked on me.
I was like, this emergency.
Yeah, like people were like, what is going to happen? Like, what's happening? And also, people don't also understand, like, what the fire, like, how close it is to your house, and like, what the damaging effects could be. I think that's just kind of like a California thing.
Yeah.
Like, we are very exposed, and we know kind of what that looks like.
People are more scared of earthquakes.
Yes.
We are not that scared of earthquakes.
No. No, I'm not. The fire was like, woo, you could see it. Like, it was crazy. And then last but not least, I celebrated my 1-year anniversary at being at City Bridge.
It's been a year?
Yeah, right?
Isn't that crazy?
It just flew. And a year actually at the beginning of this month. So, like, we're close to a year.
I really don't believe
it's
that.
It's a change at this point. crazy.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Yeah. So I'm just super excited for the seasons to be somewhat changing. We got Howard Homecoming on the horizon. There's a lot to look forward to this fall. So thank y'all for tuning in with us.
Moving into one of our favorite segments, and we have three segments that we rotate if you're someone that's new to the Reformist Pipeline. But this one is called We Love the Kids, okay? Because we do. And we're going to take some time to talk about mine is funny. Some funny, humorous, interesting times with students every time we come to this section. So I have a class this year. I teach 7th grade math, those who don't know. I got 3 homerooms, and this one's a little rocky, right? There's a certain group of boys, because they've been enabled by society to be the way that they are. But anyway, a certain group of boys that, like,
talk about it,
will never shut up. Mm. Like, one of them, he'll talk the whole entire class. Yeah, he's crazy. So this little one, his name is Mac. I was calling him Mac. And we were doing, it's the first day of school, so I did an identity map. And I like to tell the kids who I am. So I had pictures, and I had a picture of, like, my dad and me when I was little, because I'm named after my dad, so they thought that was interesting. And then I had told them that I was, like, a sister and aunt.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to be relatable, you know, because I didn't come from a perfect nuclear family.
Right.
Although I know there are lots of my students who, like, come from 2-parent households. Mm-hmm. But there's some that don't. And right. So I was like, yeah, well, there's 4 of us. I have 3 siblings. My dad had 4 kids and 3 baby mamas. And everybody's like, whoa. And I'm just like, is that serious? And one little boy, Mac, was like, dang, your daddy was pimping. I'm like,
I can't.
Well, yes, but not during those times. What is going on?
Well, yes.
Yeah, I was just like, I'm like, of all things for anyone to say, right. That's what you chose to say right now.
That reminds me of that damn video where they were, I'll say this next, go ahead. Were you done?
I'm done.
What in the world? So I think I sent you this video. I'm actually just going to freestyle at this point because We Love the Kids came to my head. The video that I sent you of the kids, and they were, I think they were spelling. And they got to, they're spelling the word at the end with E-N or something like
A-N,
that.
A-N, yeah.
A-N, yes. And then so the girl was like, lesbian. Lesbian ends with A-N.
And then the little boy was like, she said lesbian.
Lynn, that literally reminds me of what teaching second grade was like. Because just like, they're so smart and they're so genuine. And they don't. Typically, they don't mean anything by it, but they also be knowing. Like, they are very in tune, very aware of what's happening. But I feel like that video, maybe I'll try to post it to our link tree so that y'all can watch it.
Yeah. Or I'm going to post it on page, okay, because that's a good thing
It needs to be seen, because that's exactly how educators can feel.
That's what it's like.
It's just, you don't know, and you got to figure out how to respond in the moment without being human, too, right? Like, the goal is not to ostracize a kid for saying something that is true, like, and also while also trying to educate them and like to facilitate their learning in that moment, because how you respond to that child in that moment is something that they will remember, and so that's something else that you got to take into account. So all that's to say, oh my goodness, like I really love that video, because that's literally how I felt consistently as an educator. It's just you never know what you're going to get. Yep. Yeah.
Like, okay, thank you.
So yeah, so that's why we love the kids.
We are now in concept development, and if you are an avid advocate listener, then you know that this is the section where we actually get into the meat of the episode. And in this episode, y'all, we've been away for so long that we kind of just want to cue you in on some of the prominent events in education that have occurred. So we put together some like very warm and fuzzy events that we've missed during our break, and then some that are not so warm and fuzzy, but we think that all of them are super important to make sure you're abreast stepping into this new semester. So Jihad's gonna start us off.
Yes. So one of the biggest hot topics while we were away was the topic of critical race theory. What is critical race theory that you, what is it you ask? So the scholar, the amazing Kimberly Crenshaw, is a person who coined the term. And critical race theory is basically the focus that social institutions such as the criminal justice system, the education system, even the labor market are embedded with racism in their laws, their rules, and their regulations, which typically leads to different outcomes by race. So you can imagine, I know that folks have probably watched, I don't remember the movie, but I remember the term that was used consistently throughout the movie, which was redlining. And it was talking about banks.
How are you referring to the movie? Talking about, I know y'all remember the movie, but you don't remember the movie.
I don't remember the movie, but it's okay.
Carry on.
So yes, they were talking about redlining. It was a really good movie though. I'm gonna have it in the call to action so that y'all can make sure that y'all listen to it or watch it. But it was talking about redlining, and basically redlining is the principle which ensures that people who live in a certain community are not given access to other communities by way of when they go to try to take out a loan, the loan officer will not allow them to move into a certain community because there are white people that live there, and those white people are trying to keep them from moving into that community because it was seen as it would depreciate the community. So all that's to say that this is what critical race theory is focusing on, and that's just one aspect of the bigger kind of picture, which is why we're talking about critical race theory has to deal with the criminal justice system, it has to deal with the education system, it has to deal with the labor market, and these are things that are embedded in all of what we live in our everyday society. And so in the midst of the Black Lives Matter movement, it's very interesting to hear that white folks are trying to say that we shouldn't be teaching any type of critical race theory in classrooms. But let's get into the fact that at least 5 Republican-led state legislators have passed bans on critical race theory or related topics in recent months, and conservatives in at least 9 other states are pushing for those similar bans. And this is something that I think that we need to talk about, because it's one thing for us to be in a space in which we just finished, I would say, finally realizing in America that racism did not disappear. And it's very interesting that after we did this whole year of wokeness, that we're now back in a space in which we're trying to, I guess, do away with all the minimal progress that we did make. And so I find it to be very ironic that we're in a space in which we're trying to say, like, oh, no, we shouldn't be talking about race in classrooms. We should be just acknowledging and allowing people to be who they really want to be. And so I think that this is why white people are starting to say that white people shouldn't feel guilty for their skin color. So, Linz, what are...
Yes, the fuck they should.
What are your thoughts there?
Just kidding. First and foremost, I didn't know what critical race theory was. Mm-hmm. And it was odd because I feel like I feel like there were several of my friends who were like looking at me to be like, oh, I want to talk to you more about critical race theory. I didn't know what it was. I was already doing it, though. Mm-hmm. I already teach math through a black lens because math came from ancient Kemet, which is Egypt now. And there were European philosophers and mathematicians that came to Kemet and were taught by the Egyptians. And then they took it back to Europe and they colonized all of it and flipped it so it's white. Hmm. So now we have the Pythagorean theorem, which is named after a white man, but we didn't get that from a white man. Hmm. So for me, I've already been in tune with the black lens of math, or the black lens of anything. And you have too, just because I know that, and I've worked with you.
Right.
But all the black people do it. So to name it critical race theory, it's interesting. I think that this is a tenet of white supremacist culture where white people put a name to something so now they can demonize it. Because we were already doing this, but now it's a name. Now you have something to name it, and now everyone will know that it's bad.
Yeah.
I don't think white people should feel guilty for their skin color. I think white people should feel some shame or responsibility for what their ancestors did. I'm not asking you to live a life of sadness. I'm really just asking you to live a life of acknowledgement, which is what critical race theory is.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. And I think that that's the reason why, like, the work of Nicole Hannah-Jones
who is now at Howard.
Period.
With Ta-Nehisi Coates. Is so important. The 1619 Project was the first time that I am seeing history that I wish that we would have learned as kids.
Yeah,
and she has taken the kind of the things that are left out and passed over and turning it into a children's book so that children can read about it. And I think that that's what's so important. And at the end of the day, I'm like a hit dog with holler. Like, if you believe that CRT, critical race theory, is about you, then great, because it is. It's about all of us taking part in a system that has been designed against Black people and against all underrepresented minorities, especially in America. Like, these are things that we're talking about. So, like, when we're thinking about the border crisis in Del Rio, Texas, and seeing Haitian migrants try to get to the United States because we've been promising that you can be free and there's freedom here. You can, the American dream, and they're trying to get into our country and people, Customs and Border Protection are whipping them with their reins. Like, that's the reason why we need to be having these conversations, because they should never feel comfortable enough to whip someone, a human being who has traveled thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of miles to this country that is America to be here and to live a better life. And so this is the reason why critical race theory, honestly, is important to me. To Lindsay's point, I think that there are so many different facets of pre-critical race theory, like different things that we talk about it as. And I just really hope that we get to a space in which we can acknowledge our history, celebrate our history, and actually apologize for the things that did happen that we should not be justifying. So, Linz, talk to me. Give me something a little bit more positive and fun.
I can absolutely do that. Y'all, in Ohio, in Cleveland, shout out to Cleveland, I guess. I've never shouted out anywhere in Ohio before. but this summer, they decided to revamp their summer enrichment programs.
Okay.
And so, usually summer, people used to say summer school. Mm-hmm. Summer school's never like regular school, right? And because we've had this gap in COVID, they really wanted to focus on making school fun. I think there was a quote in there that one of the principals stated. It goes like, here's the reality. The kids who most need to be caught up won't come to a summer school if they don't enjoy it.
Hmm.
That goes for regular school too.
Absolutely.
And it's not that they won't come, right? Because they physically will be there, but they won't be present for school.
Right.
So I really appreciated this approach. So essentially there's like three components in the day. It starts from like something that's a little rigorous in the morning. Kids are freshest in the morning. And then it gets gradually more fun and it turns into like a project-based learning type style. And just fun for kids to have fun during the day. So there's a lot of inquiry-based learning, which we know is most related to making things real world. There's less emphasis on academics, but of course they're still present.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no like drill and kill of things. Because oftentimes what people are doing, it is a facade. It is a myth, a legend to believe that kids are going to learn 2 years in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
That learning loss thing, y'all, kids have had 2 years of learning loss.
Yes, like,
forever.
Gone.
I know this is new to you.
Yes.
It's not new for teachers. And I've seen kids with 2 years of learning loss be successful. So for me, it's not something that's so unattainable for their success, that is.
Yeah.
I love they were so serious about it. They have billboards. They have radio commercials. They're not playing.
That's what I want us to throw the book out of the window. And what do I mean by that? I'm saying all the different things that we have been doing in schools for the past X amount of years, throw it out the window because it has not been working.
Goodbye.
So like, Lindsay is an amazing advocate as well as a practitioner with this project-based learning. Like, those are the opportunities and the experiences that like students need more of in schools. And so like, I feel like this summer enrichment revamp and this camp is something that does that. It looks at, because Liz, I know that you probably have talked about this on other episodes, but if you can like just break down in short, like what you did with your students when you brought like the community in, did the little presentations.
Oh yeah, we did something similar. Like it was a little, we basically learned the lessons, but we learned them through the lens of a Shark Tank.
Yes.
And so essentially we did this entrepreneurial project and the content was based in adding and subtracting with decimals.
Mm-hmm.
And so that obviously relates straight to money. So they had to come up with a bit, be in a group. That's one part. They had to come up, and I'll go deep in this to another episode because it's so great.
But, it really is.
They had to be in a group, come up with a business plan. But prior to that, we introed it and had some people that were entrepreneurs. So my friend Jordan Culpepper was an entrepreneur. He was actually featured in a magazine when he was younger.
Yes.
When he was around their age. I don't know if you're in DC, you go to their parties. The Playmakers, Vernon, Khalil, Brandon all came and talked about how they provide an experience with the Playmakers. We watched Moe's Bows on YouTube. He is a young black man that I think he's from the South.
Yes. Yeah. Little bow ties, right?
Yeah, he creates bow ties. And he's pretty successful now.
Yes.
So we did that as an entry task and then turned it into an actual Shark Tank night where I invited the parents. We had food sponsored. We have a couple other things sponsored by other black entrepreneurs that are in the DC area. And so this is kind of what they're doing in Cleveland. Not to that extent, but they've recognized that students need to be around their friends. They need to socialize. So they're doing group work. They're having community gardens. They're doing Lego projects, learning sign language. They're assessing the strengths and needs of their neighborhoods and cities to send recommendations to city officials. These are things where kids are actually learning because we're all learning every day anyway.
Right.
But you can attach some immediate content
absolutely.
To it.
And those are the experiences that kids are going to remember.
That's what they're
going to
remember.
They're going to be like, damn, Miss Black did this thing with me, and like I got to run my own club, and something they see something in that, and like, and I know that we've talked about this off like set is, it's important for us to connect real world, real life experiences to the stuff that kids are doing in classrooms, so that they can see the value, and so that they can see something other than just math and just science and just reading. They need to see the connection so that they can figure out what they want
to
do.
Yes, it needs to be cross-curricular and it needs to be real world.
Exactly. I'm with it. So is there anything, was there anything else in that about the summer camp?
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
And they specifically didn't call it summer camp.
Oh, yes, my bad.
And they specifically didn't call it summer school. It's a summer learning experience.
Summer learning experience, y'all. Yes.
Okay, language has power.
It really does. And so please make sure that if you are running a summer school, make sure that you rebrand it, re-strategize on how to make kids to... Because kids want to be there. They want to buy in, but they want to be in a space in which they feel like they can be growing and doing things that they actually love and enjoy. Not no packets and all that good stuff. Okay, so next what's on the list is talking about all of what we know to be present, COVID. So recently, DC just opted for all public school students to test for COVID-19. And so... I guess when the school year first started, it was not going to be a requirement for students to test.
But okay.
And that is very alarming and concerning because, as we know, at the time in which schools opened, students weren't allowed to get vaccinated at that time. And so we're getting to a better space, I think, for the older students, but I still believe that younger students, which is probably like the pre-K through like the third, fourth grade range, are still not eligible for the vaccine. And so this shift is very, very, very important because now it's going to aim for about 10 to 20% of students at every school weekly to get tested so that the district DCPS can know what's the infection rate, if we should be raising any red flags, if the figure is higher than anything that is normal in that specific neighborhood. And more importantly, so that we can communicate to parents, so that we can communicate to educators, hey, you may have COVID because a student may have given it to you and you might be taking that back to your family. And so these are the things that educators put up with, and which is why it's even more important for us to be having this vaccination conversation, because I find it very alarming that educators were pushed back into the classroom and now about a month and a half in, we're trying to make it mandatory for them to be vaccinated. So why wasn't the concern and why wasn't the push pre them going back into the classroom?
Isn't that interesting? For that? Isn't that interesting how they did that?
Y'all are just being sacrificed.
Isn't that interesting?
It's very concerning. Extremely concerning.
Because they don't care about the actual adults.
Right.
they allegedly care about the kids, but really you care about the parents complaining and the parents wanting to pull their kids out of school because you won't get funding.
Yep.
Because why did we get 4 new students this week?
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just interesting how the vaccine was a thing prior to school.
Yeah.
And there's the thing. I get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it in theory, but the vaccine was available prior to school starting.
It was.
And now that school is starting, oh my God, we have all these kids that have COVID cases and they have to quarantine. Nobody's shocked but you.
Right.
We knew all this. The teachers, vaccinated or unvaccinated, went into the schools knowing that we might catch COVID.
Right.
And y'all are worried about third parties. The kids are third parties to you.
Yeah.
But they're immediately 1 degree of separation to us. And now it's like, oh, it's for the children. No, the fuck is not. Fuck you.
It really isn't.
It's also sad because they just made a new rule that you cannot play school sports if you're not vaccinated.
I heard about that.
So that literally means that if you're not 12 and up until they solidify the other vaccine, that you can't play sports.
I did hear about that. Yeah.
That's fucked up.
It really is.
Y'all want to talk about school to prison pipeline? It's so interesting, though, what people's priorities are. Is it the school-to-prison pipeline, or is it people getting vaccinated? Yeah, you can be passionate about both of those. I'm not mad at that. But y'all was all heavy gung-ho about school-to-prison pipeline.
Yep.
And now kids are sad because their parents don't feel comfortable letting the kid get the vaccine. And that's fair. That's your child.
Absolutely.
But now the kids can't play, and they're upset about it. And y'all want to talk about social-emotional learning and them being depressed, but you're okay with it because, well, you have to get a vaccine because you need to in order to play the sport. And don't get me wrong, I get it in theory, but I just want everybody to know that as anything to say, because I usually don't talk about the vaccine because I don't want to talk about it. But I want y'all to know from my experience as a teacher, the sadness that I'm seeing from this. And it'd be different if it started at the beginning of the year.
Right.
We could explain the expectations, but absolutely, every fucking week, I have to explain something new that is going to be disappointing to them.
Yep.
Because of the outside population, which is why we have the Reformist Pipeline.
Amen.
And if you're not following us on Instagram, please do so now.
Yep.
Okay? If you haven't donated to us, please do so now. Because everything you say and you do on social media impacts us, the teachers and the children.
Talk about it. No, and it really, like, being on the outside looking in, and specifically working for an education nonprofit, like, I am really trying my best to keep my ear to, like, what is happening in schools. And the things that I am hearing are alarming. And it's even more concerning that, like, we're talking about vaccination rates. Like, it's crazy that, like, we're not talking about, like, the amount of people who are still dying from COVID. But we're not talking about, like, the amount of kids who are dying from COVID. Like, we've been talking about how ICU beds at Children's Hospital are to the roof and there's not a lot of beds left. But we're not talking about how many kids are dying from this. And so it's just very concerning that the light isn't being shed on what is happening in education in America. And I think that I say this all the time with this whole, at the beginning of the pandemic, we were screaming and just talking about how much we value educators. And so to be a year and some change into this, and for the value to still be even more subpar, and for educators to literally consistently be leaving the classroom, and for educators to literally be present and saying, we are not okay, and no light is being shed on that. The only thing that's being shed is the fact that we're just giving more mandates, more asks, but no money's being given, no time is being given. There's just a whole bunch of questions.
Stop right there. And I'm like, oh God, I really should say this for the live. Gonna say it anyway.
Ooh, we getting good into it.
But there is an educator. I know I'm not supposed to know this, but I do.
Talk to me.
There's an educator that had COVID. But she was... So the rule is that when you're vaccinated, you don't have to get tested if there's like a COVID case, right? So there was a COVID case and she felt weird. They're like, oh no, you can come back to work because you're vaccinated. She's like, I don't feel comfortable coming back to work because I feel sick. Bitch had COVID. Vaccinated, had COVID.
Wow. Right?
Okay, boom. They're pressed from, this is hearsay, but I believe it because I believe teachers. Principal pressing her to get back into classroom to get to come back, like putting pressure. And pressure is just simply asking when you're going to be back. I'll tell you when I'm going to be back. I know I have a fucking job.
Right.
I'll tell you when I'm going to be back.
Absolutely.
I got COVID. So she comes back. I saw her. And I said, oh, welcome back. She looked bad still. And I hear that day, she says that she needs to go because she really doesn't feel good. The principal says, well, can you just stick it out? I'm not going to say the other piece because it might be revealing too much information. But she then went to the, to my knowledge, she went to the doctors and they basically confirmed that she probably shouldn't be at work. People don't get it. Y'all want to talk about the CDC rules and everything. Where is the sensitivity to COVID?
Hmm.
Just because you do not shed enough of the virus after 10 days for it to be contagious does not mean that you're back 100% after you, those 10 days.
It does not.
And not to run around with some kids, eighth graders, kids.
Right. Yeah, I know firsthand what it felt like to have COVID, and I don't wish that on my worst enemy. And I think that people are not, we are not having enough conversations about like the after effects, which is why we're not. Kelly Price recently just came out and was like, I'm suffering from long COVID, and like I'm learning how to breathe again. I'm learning all these different things.
And Kelly Price, y'all.
Yes, and so like. Why I think that this is like the bigger picture for me is why are we continuing to operate as if everything is okay when it's not? And like this is, it's much bigger than just the education system, because just the day-to-day happenings of everything, we're just pushing as if everything's okay and it really isn't. But on to some happiness. Talk to me, Liz, with Miss Lori Santos.
Yeah, smooth transition back to happiness.
Yes.
Lori Santos, y'all, runs the Happiness Podcast, and you can find it anywhere you listen to podcasts. She's not sponsoring us, but she's really great. I love it. There's a class that she's now offering that free of charge to high school students, and you can receive college credits. It's called Psychology and the Good Life, and this is the goal. The goal is to equip students with scientifically validated strategies for living a more satisfying life, while also creating opportunities for high-striving, low-income students and students of color to demonstrate college readiness. This right here, y'all, we always talk about the trauma that comes from being like living in poverty-stricken communities, the trauma that comes from being from a low-income community. And I just love that this specifically attacks the psychology of that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The brains and how we think, but also gives those people an opportunity to be college ready, because a lot of people believe that education in college is the way that you get out of these situations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like killing two birds with one stone.
Mm-hmm.
And according to a statement from Yale, the new program, which was developed in partnership with the University of Connecticut and the National Education Equity Lab with support from the Arthur M. Blank Foundation.
Go ahead.
It's going to be offered in more than 40 Title I schools. And Title I means that, is it 90% or 80%? Or 85?
I think it's like 85.
I think 85% of students that qualify for free and reduced lunch. I don't be knowing the percentage because I always work in Title I schools.
Okay.
So the numbers don't really matter to me. But 40 Title I schools in 17 cities, including Atlanta, New York City, Los Angeles, and New Haven, which is in Connecticut, if you didn't know. In addition to receiving access to Santos's lectures, students will be supported by both a local teacher of the high school and a Yale teaching fellow. Think about that. Getting college credits, having access to a college professor. You have a high school teacher at your school that's dedicated to making sure you understand you're able to apply these things. And a student at Yale.
That's amazing.
Fellow. Like, think about coming from a low-income community and now you have the network. There's so many things that are in play right now.
Yeah.
And I really wish that I could take this course and get some type of credit.
Okay.
But it's a beautiful thing.
That is. No, I think back to me being in some grade. I was able to tour University of Laverne, and my mind was just like blown to be on a college campus. And at the time, I want to say I was in middle school or elementary school, but at the time, I just saw like older, they look like adults. And now being on the other side of it, I'm like, wow, like y'all weren't that much older than me. But even that little bit of exposure pushed me to want to go to college. And so, like, yeah. I wish that I would have been positioned to get college credit. And not just through AP classes. Like, that just wasn't, that wasn't for me. Like, I did not enjoy taking AP classes. Like, give me something that I actually value. Like, why wasn't there, like, an AP student government? Like, that was something that I was very involved with. Like, give me something that I was a little bit more, that was appealing to me. And so I think that that's, when we think about trying to incentivize students and giving them more choice, student choice, is so important. So, so important. Like, that's how you get the investment from them, is if when they see that they can do something and they can choose, as opposed to being told, like, this is what you have to do. So I love this whole model. And I really appreciate,
Samesies.
I really appreciate her. And then also, I just wanted to also talk about the fact that all these partnerships, like, it takes a lot to get the amount of partnerships that she did to make this happen.
Yeah.
And that also, people don't really know what goes into that, but shout out to her for all of it. I know she probably has a team that she's working with, but still, like, her platform is amazing. So just wanted to shout that up. Next, I wanted to get into DC's teacher impact evaluation system. I feel like I'm doing, like, all the stuff that's not lit.
Very
on-brand. Right.
I'm a lit bitch.
Clearly. So, DC's impact teacher evaluation system, drum roll please, guess what? It is bias. Go figure.
Wow.
But before we get into that, I want to talk to y'all about a little bit more about, like, what it is. So the IMPACT is the performance evaluation system that is used for DCPS educators. And when they first put this into place, the initial goal was to give employees clear and actionable feedback that they can act on and make sure that they are able to respond to and grow over time. However, from the findings of a study that was conducted by my alma mater, one of my two, American University, they found that racially biased with white teachers on average, that the evaluation system was racially biased towards white teachers on average, receiving higher scores on evals than black and Hispanic educators. And the reason why this is so significant is that this is the district. This is still the Chocolate City, regardless of what people say.
Yeah,
and
it is.
This is a district of has so many black students and so many black educators also. And so for us to be using an evaluation system that is disenfranchising the very people that it's supposed to be serving, which is these students.
The students.
This is crazy. Like, why is it that we created an impact evaluation system that is going to force black and brown educators out of the classroom when they are the ones who need to be there? Because we've told y'all on episodes prior to this that black students do better when they have black teachers, and the same applies across lines of difference. Black educators literally, hey, I hate to say it, I sound ridiculous, but we're just the cream of the crop, and it's because we teach with so much more compassion, more, and we just have lived experiences that are just different than our white counterparts. And so at the end of the day, it's just very interesting that this is where we're at in America in the 21st century in 2021. Black and brown educators are still being pushed out of the classroom, even when they're passionate and amazing. Do you want to say something, Wins?
All these damn systems, teacher evaluation systems, it's, again, it's a white supremacist tenet.
Yeah.
The thing is, you could just really work on getting to know people and understanding if they're good for them. I remember being a mentee teacher when I was at Howard, and I love my mentor teacher. However, she was telling me how to cheat the game for impact. And I think she knew what she was doing. I'm not certain she knew how to teach. I don't know if she knew how to connect.
Mm.
And if you can't connect, it's sometimes hard for children to understand it. Because I remember those kids, like, really low, the low-level kids. Some of them, like, were English as a second language learners. I remember I kept them in for recess, and they wanted to stay in for recess. Because I was actually explaining it to them. And they were like, oh, nobody's ever explained it to me like this.
Wow.
But people worried about beating the system.
Yep.
And you can't even get to the stuff that matters. So, Ani, much lighter note.
Talk to me.
Talking about yet another black teacher that is in the DCPS system. And I'm sure He got to have a good impact score after telling you that story. This happened in March, y'all, but I still think it's important to highlight him because I'm sure he's doing wonderful things right now. Mr. Jonte Lee, which is a chemistry teacher at Coolidge High School. He is nicknamed the Kitchen Chemist, and not because he cooks up drugs. Because when they went into quarantine, y'all, he brought all his supplies to his kitchen. And made his kitchen like a whole chemistry setup. He also bought his kids supplies to follow along with all his lessons, his lives, and his experiences. Mm. And it used to be called like some, what does Mr. Lee have in his kitchen? And he would be like, the kids would be like, wait, you got a kitchen, Mr. Lee? You in high school, you asking your teacher if you got a kitchen?
It's crazy,
because Lens. Teachers are dehumanized. Yeah. We can't possibly be human in a kitchen.
There's no way.
Because we're teachers.
Yep.
But anyways, turn that kitchen into a chemistry lab. That's amazing. And he was on Zoom. He was also doing lives, I want to say from Instagram. I can't quite remember what I read. Mm-hmm. But other people across the world were tapping in to what he was teaching. And he actually received an award from Amazon. Hmm. And Kevin Hart actually Zoom bombed him.
Wow.
Right.
That's what I'm talking about.
Kevin Hart Zoom bombed him, awarded him with the award, and gave the school a new chemistry set.
Wow.
All of them. And scholarships to college.
Yes.
Love that.
That's amazing.
Mr. Lee, everybody.
Shout out Mr. Lee. And I need to hit him up because we need him to apply to Design Fellowship. But that's another story for another day. Okay. That too. No, yeah. Like these are the types of experiences that we're talking about is trying to allow students to see that there are some actual living live learning lessons that you can apply today in your home after you leave this classroom. And so shout out to Mr. Lee because those chemistry, honestly, I did take it. I was about to say I didn't take it, but it was an A through G requirement. Did not like it, did not enjoy it. And I think had I had an educator who was a little bit more passionate and doing a little bit of cooking stuff up and stuff like that, I'd probably been into it. You know, I need to see things. I'm a visual, so reading about cells and atoms and stuff, and that's just not for me.
No.
But yeah, all that's to say. So before we transition to this next topic, just wanted to give a trigger warning that it's going to be about violence, specifically DC violence, and just wanted to, before we jump into the overall topic, wanted to take a moment of silence because there recently was a 15-year-old boy who was killed at KIPP DC College Prep. His name is Kimon Payne, and just wanted to take a moment of silence just to really observe the fact that he was killed and to just give him an uplift his soul. And so I just want to talk about this because this has just been weighing really heavy on my heart. Being in D.C. for about next year will be 10 years, and it's crazy to even say. And I haven't seen the increase of violence the way that it's happening with kids since I've been in the district. And it's just... it chokes me up to even talk about it because I think it's one thing when we have adults engaging in violence, but to me it's I hold kids to a very near and dear place to my heart. And so when I see them engaging in any type of violence, it hits home. And the reason why is because they are children. And these are things that are being taught to them. They are being influenced in some type of way, shape, and form. And this is the reason why this episode, we've been talking about some things that really impact the way that they see themselves. And so if they have these opportunities to do project-based learning, if teachers are given opportunities to grow, and me speaking specifically to Black educators, to grow in schools, to be leaders at those schools, talking about what happened earlier thinking about how we can just, you know, provide summer enrichment opportunities for Black and Brown students. If we're actually talking about critical race theory in classrooms, like, these are all things that kind of got us to this point today with students dealing with their anger and their emotions, the way in which they're carrying it out. And this is only one isolated incident to the all the other incidents that are happening in DC. I know that there was a national story about two teenage women who tried to carjack an Uber driver and ended up killing him. Like, these are things that are happening, and it is not okay. And instead of us reacting as a community, we just continue to just go day by day and make it seem as if everything's okay, when it's really not. We 15-year-olds, 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds, these are kids. These are children. It should never be okay that they are harming one another. Yep. It should never be okay that they feel like they have to rob someone, that they feel like they have to take things. And that just shows that we as a community, we as a society, are not doing enough to provide for them. And so, yes, this is happening in the DC community, but it's much bigger than that. And until we really have a reckoning to talk about America's education system, these are the same types of things that are not only going to happen in DC, but that are going to happen in our education system more broadly, because we're not doing enough to support educators. So when we talk about the hashtag of protect our educators, this is the reason why. Because if we're investing in our educators and our education system, inherently students will be served, and students will be reared with the right resources, with the right love, with the right compassion, with the right vision, with the right dreams. Like, there's so much more that can be poured into these kids, but it's not happening because of the way that we're not choosing to invest in education. And so I just wanted to lift that up, and I really want us to think more broadly around, like, what is a way that we can just lean on and mentor a younger person so that they know that there is someone here for them?
Yeah, I would second all that, and because I also work at a KIPP school, I have, like, some more insight. Of course, it is hearsay, because I'm hearing it from the students, but it's really crazy because KIPP DC Prep already has a metal detectors. So essentially, one of the students brought a knife to school because I believe he was it's rumored that he was getting bullied by the other kid. And the other kid is a boxer. So his hands are registered. So he's not supposed to be putting his hands on anybody anyway. But I could see why the kid with the knife felt like he needed to bring a knife. And again, this is all hearsay. I'm just sharing my perspective that is from my kids, because my kids were also impacted even though they don't go to this school.
Right.
And it's crazy because, like, this regular to them.
Yeah.
This is red. This shit is very regular.
Yeah.
Like, of course, people were, like, sad and disappointed, but it wasn't like we didn't have to stop nothing. There were some conversations that have obviously happened, but people were able to function. And I was just like, hey, y'all, you know, I'll leave space for anything.
Right.
There were a couple people that were, like, not feeling it. I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't give a fuck about this math.
Right.
I don't give a fuck about you.
Absolutely.
So it's just very disappointing, especially because I believe in 2018 or 2019, a similar thing happened. They're around that same area, and our mayor heightened security around there. And so my question is to the mayor, why didn't you think that going back, you had heightened security prior to the pandemic. Why did you think that you didn't need the heightened security again? But you care about the kids and you're making sure that everybody gets vaccinated.
Yeah.
However, the same thing happened in the same area with these same students, and you didn't ensure that it was there after a pandemic.
Yep.
But part of your reason for getting kids in the school is because y'all didn't want them to be depressed and have slow social emotional skills. It doesn't add up.
It doesn't. It really doesn't. It's concerning. Like, and I don't even have the words to say, because I see what's happening. Like, I go on my walk up here. I live in Northwest, very upper Northwest, basically Maryland. And I see
Maryland.
MPD directing traffic over here. I see MPD writing tickets over here. I see MPD high-fiving kids over here. But why is that not happening at the school that I used to teach at? Why is that not happening in the area that I used to teach at? Why is it not happening in the neighborhood? Like, that's concerning to me. that, and it's an inherent difference. And so it's frustrating to even see that these things are happening, because it's preventable. There are things that can happen to make sure that we are investing in these. Like, no one shows up and says, I want to. Kids don't do that. That's not what they are
didn't
doing.
Come to school and say
no, I want to kill that. Someone today. No. And so I just really want us. I want my these tickets that I pay. I want it to be going to education.
You want tickets too?
Yeah.
we got to talk after this.
Oh, well, amnesty till December. So they're not doubling. But I really want
us. You got to talk anyway.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay.
so yeah, I just want us to be doing more. But on to our amazing last topic.
Ooh, yeah, sorry y'all. I know that was really heavy, but honestly, there's just no way to close out
really
the death of a child.
No.
And honestly, two children lost their lives that day.
Two, yes.
If we're getting real.
Yes.
Both the moms lost babies.
Agreed, times a thousand.
But to close this out on a very positive note, there is a teacher in Atlanta.
Yes.
And then, do I sound like I'm from there? Atlanta.
ATU.
Right.
Anyways.
That was what I knew.
There is Miss Acker. She is a black woman, a beautiful brown-skinned black woman with this natural little short cut. Okay, come on, baby.
Yes.
But she is in Atlanta, and she does this thing with her fourth graders, and they walk up to a full-length mirror. And there is a word, the words I on one side and am on the other side. And they have to fill in to create an affirmation, and they say it to themselves. So one girl with braids said, I'm smart. Another little boy said, I'm a good person. I probably would say that one too. And it's just really beautiful. And I'm shout out to her, because black women in STEM are very important to me.
Amen.
And she teaches math and science at this elementary school.
Yes.
And she's really trying to boost students' confidence and self-love. So I can just imagine how amazing it is to see students, one, come up with their own affirmations.
Yes.
Some of them are coming up with their own.
Mm-hmm.
But if they can't think of any, she gives it to them. But it's just, we just need more kindness and compassion. And this is a legit activity that students can do to boost the social emotional awareness, to decrease depression and sadness and insecurity. Probably decreases bullying too.
Yes.
If they really did some data around it. So shout out to her for going above and beyond. But I specifically appreciate her above and beyond, because it's not something that's unattainable.
Yep.
It's something that any teacher can do today.
Mm-hmm.
Buy a mirror and teach kids how to line up, which they already know how to do, and speak to themselves in a mirror.
Yep.
It's nothing crazy. I love that. So
I
shout
love
out to Ms. Acker.
Self-talk, that is an amazing skill. And I say skill because I will say that I was fortunate to have my mom say, I love you. And like that be something that I hold on to, and like have people believe in me and to tell me, Jihad, I believe in you. You're going to be successful. And you have to be real with yourself and say, like, not everybody has that. And oftentimes there are a lot of kids in this world that do not have that. And so, like, that's the reason why we get into these spaces in which kids don't feel affirmed. And we need to give them the language. And I'm saying we, not educators. I'm saying we, as in society, need to give that to them.
Yep.
Like, we need to provide spaces for them to see themselves, to feel affirmed, to feel confident. It may be the smallest thing. A kid opens a door for you and holds it. Affirm that child. Affirm that child. And make them feel loved. You don't know what that can do for them. And that's the reason why this is so important, is because it needs to happen more.
It does.
So I feel like this is the perfect way for us to like close this out. This is amazing.
Absolutely. Go us.
Go us.
We are now here with the call to action. Every time you hear an episode, we will have a call to action, which is a specific action that you can do to support us or support the education system. This week's call to action is to pull up on us.
Pull up.
At the Reformers Pipeline Live podcast, damn it. Now, let's just be clear and be honest with y'all. We've pushed this back twice. And if you come to the show, we will tell you why we pushed it back. The show is on Monday. October 25th at 7 p.m. We will yes. That's when we're going to host our first live show. You're going to want to be there. And I mean, what better time than now with a new beginning of schools in the DMV area to actually have this live show.
Yes.
So we're super excited to co-host a gathering with our partners over at No Kids Allowed, the second best rated Initiative 71 compliance store in Washington, D.C., offering an extensive menu of exotic marijuana gifts.
Yes, and so in addition to kicking off our second semester of season two, our live podcast will be a space to come together and discuss how COVID has upended the education system and brought even more responsibilities to all educators. Our live podcast will provide you, as a community stakeholder, an opportunity to discuss various education topics, gather as a community, and we'll be raffling off gifts from our partners at No Kids Allowed. See you there. Peace, love, and light, y'all.
Hoodie-hoo!